Welcome to Dig Deep, the mining podcast. In this podcast, we go deep into mining news, hot topics, and live interviews with mining professionals and leading figures in the mining industry. Introducing your host, Rob Tyson, founder and director of Mining International and Mining International Executive, a leading global mining recruitment and headhunting agency.
Hi, mining community. Welcome back to another episode of the Dig Deep, the Mining Podcast. And today's guest is Darren Hazelwood, who's the CEO of Panther Metals, who are LSE, which is the London Stock Exchange listed company, who invests in or acquires companies or projects within the natural resources sector, which have the potential for growth and value generation over the medium to long term. The company focuses its search on highly attractive and established and politically stable mining jurisdictions, such as Australia, North America, and Canada. Darren's a highly experienced private sector business leader and experienced mining investor, focusing on value creation within rapidly growing natural resources companies. Darren's going to tell us a little bit more about Panther Metals, the journey that they've been on so far, and what the outlook is and the future of the company. So that's welcome, Darren, to the podcast. How are you doing, Darren?
I'm very well, Rob. Thanks. Thanks for having us on. Look, you know, the Dig Deep podcast is one of those podcasts that's on my Spotify that I listen to when I'm walking the dog or spending a couple of hours driving to watch my team Ipswich. And to be on here is a real pleasure for me. So thanks for having me on.
No, I appreciate that. And I like our active listeners to come on and obviously after listening to various episodes, want to then come on and obviously educate the mining industry. And we obviously met recently at PDAC as well, in person, so that's also good. I like to meet as many people as I can at some of these conferences that come onto the podcast. Obviously this is done over the computer, but it's good to meet my guests in person as well. So for those that don't know you, that are listening, I just wonder if you can tell our audience a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your career and your background, before we start speaking about Panther.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Yeah, Rob, like you alluded to, I come predominantly from the private sector. Whilst I was building businesses in the private sector, I was also quite a big investor in the London markets in the exploration space. And I was approached about Panther, and it was on the next exchange, as it was then, it's now the Aquis, which is a junior London market. It was getting refinanced, and would I be interested in going on as a NED? And I took the opportunity. And within about 12 months, I'd taken on the business as CEO. My first and only aim at that stage was to get the business onto a more mature market so that we could raise the capital that's required to build the business. And achieved that in January of 2020, and straight into the tooth of COVID that kicked off in the February. So it was a bit of an inauspicious start for the company. But with that came its benefits. We've got the Ebonga Greenstone Belt, which we wouldn't have had, I don't believe, if it wasn't for COVID. So we kind of had a very slow start. The first 18, 19 months were quite brutal. Mainly due to travel restrictions. But within that time, we listed off our Australian assets into a separate entity that's now trading on the ASX. And just totally focused on Canada. And then, of course, in the February of 22, which was only sort of 6 months after the COVID restrictions started to ease, the market turned in correlation with the with Mr. Putin going into Ukraine, and it hasn't recovered, but I think the market is on its going in the right direction now. We've spent that time building the business. We don't own a single asset that we come to market with. We're exceptionally happy with our asset base now, and the discoveries we've made within that asset base are very, very prospective. We'll cover that more, but that's where Panther sits today, and I believe that we're on the verge of moving into a bull market based on fundamentals. But again, probably cover that as we go along the podcast, Rob.
Yeah. Before we speak about Panther, You're an experienced investor in the resources sector. Is there any areas, disciplines, commodities that you look at, jurisdictions, etc., what you've obviously achieved during your career?
I'm a big bull on tier one jurisdictions, Australia, Canada. I think there is more than enough that's undiscovered in those locations that you can remove some of the geopolitical risks by looking at those areas, especially as a junior explorer or a micro cap explorer. I won't dismiss looking at anywhere ultimately, but you have to make sure that you're building the business within the confines of your space at that time. That's why I'm comfortable where we're at. We know the systems, and systems aren't perfect. They're not perfect anywhere. We face similar challenges to just about everyone globally. But you have a framework that isn't going to change tomorrow. And as a result of that, you can work to it.
Wonder if you can just now just tell us a little bit about Panther Metals, obviously how the company got established, and a little bit about the history.
Yeah, as I say, we listed in January 2020. As we stand today, we've been very prudent. We still haven't yet doubled our shares in issue, despite being on the market for 4 years, and that's through a lot of prudent actions. We're very much in a sentiment-driven market, Rob. And when you're in a sentiment-driven market and the sentiment is negative, I don't believe in feeding that negativity in terms of stock. You have to be aware of all of the facets. But look, as a business, we've probably got four areas that effectively the CEO sits in the middle of, and he manages them, and that's your asset base. You've then got the city or the finances. You've got your investors. And then you've got the business itself that you're trying to grow around all of those. And I think it's important that as a business that we're aware of that, and hence why I've stayed tight when I believe we've had to. You can look at, I took the decision early in 2023. I didn't think the market was going to be particularly buoyant. We have no issues raising cash. We have no issues being offered cash. We were offered cash in the spring of 2023. It wasn't enough to do what I believe the assets deserved in terms of work on the ground. So I knew that I would straight away be smashing the business back into the market's hands if we took that money. And so as a result, I turned it down, and I turned down several offers in 2023 on the back of that all I was doing was damaging the business and damaging the shareholder base. Now, times move on. They adjust. You make a call. We've seen gold move recently. We're seeing copper do the same. This week, we've seen zinc move. We've seen tin. The commodities are starting to move. And the sentiment within the sector can change rapidly. And we've got to make sure that we're flexible enough and we've got the access to everything we need to enable us to take advantage of that on the turn of sentiment. And look, it's a completely different business as well in terms of the macro picture and opportunities open to us as a business. But it has turned at PDAC. I'd be interested to get your thoughts on this. I did sense a lot of frustration where people weren't sure why things hadn't turned, because the supply shortages that are coming, and they are going to disrupt the global supply chain. I think there's no doubts about that now. That isn't being reflected within the industry and why sentiment hadn't turned. But I think sentiment's probably been on the negative side for so long that it's almost that tanker that needs turning. And it will take longer to turn the tanker the longer the trough has been in place. And whilst I believe that we're out of that trough, we just maybe have to take a little bit of time to turn that tanker. But it definitely is turning. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, talking about PDAC and even, I suppose, the last few years at conferences, I think there's been a positive sentiment, but again, frustration. I've been obviously doing these podcasts for quite a while now. And I would say over the last 18 months to 2 years, especially initially, say 2 years ago, I had a lot of CEOs coming on. We used to have a quick chat before we start recording. And so many of the CEOs, when I asked them how things are, they would put out such good news, whether that's good drill results, it could be anything that they're involved in that's positive, yet their share price went down. And that's been going on for quite a long time since then. So any information that companies put out there doesn't seem to necessarily be affecting the share price as you expect it would. And I think that's just prolonged for such a long time. Like anything in mining, and I always talk about branding in mining to many guests. And what are the answers around branding and mining? In whatever we implement, it just takes so long. And it's like anything. If whatever goes up comes down, and vice versa. And I think because of where the industry is and where it has been over for a number of years, the upside is just about around the corner. And once it does turn that corner and builds momentum, we'll be having different conversations in a few years' time and for many years ahead.
Yeah, look, we've actually got a completely different industry now. And it's probably more of a frustration to me than anything else at this point that the message isn't getting out, because the funding mechanisms that we've got available now, they're unheard of. We've got government's funding. Yeah, we saw the Aussie government fund to $800 billion last week. We saw the DOE in the States fund the lithium project to $2.25 billion. And so you've got government's funding globally. You've got provinces within Canada funding. You've now got end users entering the market to try and secure their commodity entering the market. You've got majors, and this is something that's not being talked about as well, majors dropping down the food chain now. And yeah, that's a first-hand experience. They are coming in earlier and earlier and earlier, and they're not getting the credit that they probably deserve at this stage, that actually they are offering a helping hand. You've seen, for instance, Palladium One and Glencore in 2023. That's one of many. But we need discoveries. Everyone knows we need discoveries, and everyone's talking about how do we finance them. Well, I've just mentioned all mechanisms that haven't been available for probably the last 10 or 12 years that are now available. But none of those other mechanisms have gone. They're still there. They still exist. So what an amazing point in time for an industry to sit at, that it's seeing different mechanisms for funding available to it, yet you're seeing sentiment not picking up on that. And I do think that's possibly linked to how long and how deep the trough's been. But now, yeah, the sun's starting to shine, guys. And it genuinely is starting to shine. And we've got clear evidence it's starting to shine. And with the discoveries we need, yeah, personally, I'd love to see an industry adopt a phrase of like not afraid to fail, something along those lines. A bit corny, but we've got we've had a market that as you've alluded to has used any news at a liquidity event, so it doesn't matter what the business puts out, the share price comes down. I personally wasn't prepared to feed that. We're super confident on the assets that we've got within the business. That's why you've seen us not deal. We're not a deal orientated business. It may have looked like that at one time, but that was where we were bringing in the assets we wanted, as opposed to what we had. Even though we didn't feel there's anything wrong with the other assets, we're looking for assets that have got scale and they tick a lot of boxes in the right jurisdictions. And it's a crying shame that we haven't seen that term. But as I say, the more interviews that done, the more people are willing to talk about it, the more people that are willing to take chances in terms of drilling. Look, let's be honest. There isn't a spot of ground globally that hasn't been picked over in one shape or form. And as a result of that, all of the low-hanging fruit in terms of discoveries that you can find from surface, they've gone. They've been picked up. They're now mines, or they've been found that they're not ever going to be mines, whatever. So as a result, I think we've got to be more aggressive as an industry to make those discoveries. We've got to be willing to fail in terms of using the drill bit. But we can't because of the funding mechanisms that are now available to us, that should give us the confidence to be able to do that, because we're not totally reliant on the market that has had too much of a free rein on the downside. And I genuinely believe that is turning. It's going to take time. But the end result, I can see us in 12, 18 months, you know, wondering what the fuss was about, why we looking back at our diaries and trying to work out why we effectively paused during the downturn. But because it's not a case of it might come, it just simply has to. And there's a realization globally, once governments pick up, once governments are writing checks, you have your answer. They do not give taxpayers money out to especially to the mining industry, where sentiment and historic events have maybe clouded the industry. And I think that possibly unfairly, I've got no problems engaging with people that might be on the negative side of the industry, because once they start to get a picture of what we do as businesses, what we do to ensure that we're complying, and not just complying, that we don't want to leave scars on the landscape, that we want to get in there as efficiently as we can, and we want to do our job and then move on. But no, it's exciting times, Rob. It is, but we maybe just need to encourage a change in mindset from the frustration to, look, it's not completely blue sky and rosy out there, but it's turned.
Yeah, and I think certainty is slowly creeping back into our industry. And I suppose you can compare where we are at the moment as to running a marathon. And I know I have run a marathon quite a few years ago. We're still only at the first few miles of a marathon, and there's still a long road ahead. We know where the destination is. We know we need all these commodities out of the ground. They need to be mined for our future. There's a lot of, obviously, surplus being depleted. And they need to be replenished. And we know that. So, again, everything in the mining industry seems to take 10 times longer than that other industries. And I think that's just part of mining, part of what mining's about. So I think there's a very positive future ahead. And like I said, we're probably only at the first, we're looking at a marathon, we're only still at the first few miles, and we've got many miles to go.
No, I definitely concur with that.
I wonder if you can just give us a quick overview of some of the assets that you have and what you've sort of achieved to date.
Yeah, well, so we've conducted we've got three assets. All of our assets are in Ontario. We have the Dotted Lake project. That's it's about 16 kilometres north of the Hemlo mine near Marathon. Now, that shouldn't be confused as a gold project. Actually, to our east is the 20-kilometer long Tyco project that Palladium One have talked about, and that they've made some outstanding discoveries, Neil and his team there. And Glencore come in actually in March, I believe, of 2023, took 10% of the business. And it's a new district. Palladium One have declared it a new district. Now, interestingly, their exploration model is very simple. It's anomalies, then take soil samples over the top of the anomalies. And if those anomalies show any elevated commodity, they then drill those anomalies. And they've had almost 100% success rate on that. Now, the Dotted Lake project runs in parallel with that. We're about 4 kilometres from the border of them. And we've got copper, nickel, cobalt, and the anomalous numbers over the north shore of Dotted Lake are in excess of just about everything that Palladium One have got from their success, and they are widespread as well. Now, we've got drill permit applications in on that area, and we wait on those. And frankly, we're happy. We're happy to park Dotted Lake. Let Palladium One keep doing their thing. Let Glencore do their thing with Palladium One. When the time comes, we'll drill it. There's a lot of confidence inside the business for that. It's almost it's almost that reserve thing in your back pocket for us. We own the project 100%. It's got no financial instrument over it. And I think that would has the potential to pleasantly surprise. Then we've then got the Manitou Gold Project, which is to the west of Thunder Bay, about 4 hours west. That's in, we share borders with Dryden Gold there, who have recently listed, and a couple of other big Canadian players. And that, again, that's drill ready. We've got permits on there, but we probably are in no rush to go there. We've got to make sure that we're focused, because what we've uncovered on the Bonga, Bonga is a greenstone belt. It's 2.5 hours north of Thunder Bay on Tarmac Road. It's on the, you've got the 811 just off of the main Thunder Bay to Armstrong Road. And it sits just to the west of the Ubonga Lake. Now, we actually control about 90% of this greenstone belt. And for the limited drilling we've done, we've had remarkable success. We've got separate areas on there. You've probably got 10 junior exploration areas on one greenstone belt. This is the potential of it. The market in London hasn't got that. But then we haven't necessarily fed the market in terms of playing the game because of market conditions. But we've put five holes into one area called Wishbone. We've confirmed that we've got a subsea floor VMS on Wishbone. Wishbone has anomalous copper over 10 kilometers by 2 kilometers. And it's a subsea floor VMS. We've hit four different lenses on Wishbone out of five holes. We've hit mineralization grading up to 11.6% zinc. We've had the likes of Bruce Gemmell. He's looked at our core. He's a world-renowned VMS expert. He said to us that you've drilled the center of the core, and that's barren. We hit 42 meters of semi and massive sulfide in a contiguous length. This is a huge system. And it was a bit confusing initially as to why it was barren in the core, in the center, in the heart of the VMS, because a traditional VMS, of course, is mineralized. But a subsea floor VMS, it won't be, because you don't have the temperature divergence when the commodities come through from the hydrothermal fluids. That means it creates like a halo effect around the center as opposed to being mineralized. So that's a really exciting area. And all it is now for us, we know we've got mineralization. We know what it is. It's just about step out drilling. And we've put for a total of five holes in there. Now we've got the survey area on Ubonga. That's about 8 kilometers to the east of Wishbone. That's an anomaly that's 3 kilometers by half a kilometer wide. EM and mag, it sticks out like a Christmas tree. We've put one hole in there as a scout hole. We hit 14 meters of zinc, about 0.11% zinc. But the most important thing there, the metallurgical work confirmed, actually, this is another VMS. And it was a single hole. So we've got to go back there. Again, it's just stepping out of drilling. We know it's a VMS. So you've got six holes, the discovery of two new VMSs that have never been found before. And we move then up to the awkward area on Ubonga. Really interesting area. There's probably been the area that's most work's taking place historically. No one's ever found the source. We have good reason to believe the conduit there is the source, but that would take time to sit down with people and run through it. But what's most exciting for us at this stage is the graphite. So we put one hole, we put some very shallow holes in. We were looking to try and intercept the outer walls of the potential conduit and just see if they were mineralized. But we didn't go deep enough in reality. We're talking about 76 meter holes at 45 degrees. However, one of those holes was in the sediments, and there's never been a single hole in the sediments in that awkward area ever. Right, that's a lie. Apologies. There was one hole on the edge of the sediments in 1966 that never got tested, but the hole log confirmed graphitic intersection. But it didn't prove, it wasn't what they were hoping to hit. So in them days, they didn't assay. So we one of the holes, as I say, was on the sediments, and we actually intersected graphite at 2.2% over 27.2 meters. And to hit that on a scouting hole, a very shallow scouting hole, is very interesting. But that triggered us to do a complete review. Now, we reviewed the data previously, but we weren't looking for graphite. We've reviewed all the historic exploration logs from that area from the 60s, 70s, 80s. Now, you've got to remember, no one's been looking for graphite ever. Okay, so it's only been the last 5 or 10 years. Every single report we've got for that area mentions graphite at surface, universally. So we've defined a 21 square kilometer exploration area. We know that this is at surface. It's mentioned in one of the reports as abundant across the area at surface. So our first job this year is we're going to get boots on the ground as the moment snowmelt as is confirmed to have done. What we're going to do, we're going to go out there, we're going to get guys on the ground. We've got the conductors. For instance, just in one area of this, we've got three conductors that were parallel. We knew they were either graphitic or they were sulfides. They're either sulfides or graphitic. And we now know for certain it's graphitic, though that's the response. Now we've got these run for about 5 kilometers, all three of them, all parallel. And this is one tiny area. We've got other areas that the conductors are there, the responses are there from all the mags, but everyone's always ignored it because it's graphite. No one was really interested in graphite. Now the world's changed. It's a major part of the carbon zero targeting and critical minerals, however we want to phrase it. This is an area that we've got the evidence already. So we need to go in there. We need to kick some rocks. Literally, it's been a warm year in Northwest Ontario. We're going to go out there, kick some rocks, confirm what the historic reports are saying, and then it becomes very, very interesting very, very quickly. We're in that particular side of Canada and along the east coast of the United States. The requirement for critical minerals and the factories being built is frankly massive, and we sit in the right location with the right commodity, and we've just got to start proving this up now. And it goes without saying, Rob, there's lots of work to do. It's network, etc., but we just want to define this exploration area, and I think that will start to create its own momentum within the business. We've on the Bonga as well, that we've got the in a separate area again. This is on the awkward batholith. So this is about 5 or 6 kilometers away from where the graphite is, and maybe a bit further actually. We've got the second highest lithium. I'm not a lithium bull, but we've got second highest lithium showing, but also rare earths. It's one lake sediment sample that's got, it goes well north of 2,000 ppms in rare earths. And that area has never even been looked at. It's actually mentioned in the 2023-24 sort of 11 or 12 main target areas from the Ontario Geological Society. And that's bang on a bonga. But the takeaway here is, for us, it's VMS's step out drilling and prove up or have a look, see how widespread this graphitic area is. And all for a company that's valued at less than 3 million quid. It's incredible.
It's a bargain. It's clear, obviously, you made a big call in early 2023, obviously spending time advancing the business, but obviously not attacking it. I wonder if you can just give us some background as to why. And I suppose as to why you don't sort of sit back. I just wonder what your thoughts are around that.
Yeah, I did, and it's not something that I could even talk to in terms of the market. The overarching and the overriding reason for this was that we have the assets, right? You've got to remember, all this work had taken place prior, and we felt that our best steps were to protect the assets. And I took that view, and I took that call. I approached the board, and I said to them, look, this is my view. This is what I believe is going to happen. And if we go out and just raise capital now, all we're going to do is dilute the business. And we're going to dilute the business into a market that isn't going to reward us for just about anything. And if we do that, then that's not fair on existing shareholders. And it's not fair, actually, on the people that you've bought into a new fundraise. Because you know that you're going straight back into the market. Now, we haven't issued a share since August of 2022, believe it or not. And everyone's welcome to have a look back on that. But we did advance the business during 2023. We've made huge inroads in terms of our network within governments, locally. We did actually get a small drilling campaign completed at the end of 2023 as well. I saw an opportunity and grabbed it. But it's effectively, we know that it's a sentiment-driven market. And if the market isn't rewarding companies for their success, then we're leaders, Rob, right? And we have to take a view. The market was not rewarding success. The market doesn't reward the success. We don't feed it. But look, from a personal perspective, now I'd absolutely love a market cap of 20 to 30 million. I would be exceptionally active on M&A because I think there is a huge amount of value out there. The market in London's not going to do that to us over the next few months. But then that's kind of some of the short-termism in the market as well. Let's be frank. It looks at today. It doesn't see what's potentially there tomorrow. And as a result, it then loses out on potential M&A action and everything else. But yeah, it was very much my own view. The market was going to be poor for the year. And let's not feed the market. Let's make sure that we're putting together all of the actions required to make sure that our foundations are absolutely solid as we really go to work on these assets. And that's why we're going now. I personally believe the market's turned. It's in a different place. It's not shining through yet. But look, we know that the biggest gains and the biggest moves in this sector, they tend to happen in about the first 200 days of any bull market. And once they go, they're gone. And within the blink of an eye, everyone's in a different spot. That wasn't going to happen in 2023. I made that call. I was absolutely spot on. I protected our existing shareholders. Yes, it's been a frustrating time for them in terms of news flow. We know this is a news-dominated industry, but hopefully as the year progresses, they will then start to see the benefits of me making those choices. And be honest with you, they've been amazingly supportive as well. We've seen a number increase their position over time. They know that it goes against sort of every sinew of my own belief that you have to be active, you have to be willing to drill, you have to be willing to fail. To make discoveries, you also have to be willing to fail on them, and you're striking a balance. But yeah, that's me, and that was my view in early 23.
Yeah, how do you see the sector changing over the remainder of 2024, and what would you say some of the major challenges you feel that the industry is going to come up against as we move forward through 2024?
I think that the tanker moving, as I've alluded to, that's going to take time. So that means that some of the traditional funding that has been available is still available. It comes at an horrendous cost. You know, everyone likes to charge a corporate like a wounded rhino. And we have to understand that we're there to offer trading opportunities for investors, right? So for those investors to have cash on the hip, they have to have successes. And as the market gradually picks up, more people will have successes and that money starts to circulate. So anyone that decries a success within this sector is frankly a fool, because that money does spread out across the sector. So I think the biggest challenge is going to be how quickly we can get the capital back into the sector that the sector requires. But as I say, there can be big moves in the first 200 days of any bull market. So you can see that happen it feels slow, but then before you know it, you're onto a bigger plane. But that would be my only my biggest fear, that it doesn't happen quick enough. From a Panther perspective, it's amazing, Rob, you know, and I don't mind saying this on here, we've done a thorough and very, very deep dive into flow-through funding, which we qualify for. And the tax breaks associated with that, the advantages to investors are fantastic. And it's certainly an avenue that medium to longer term we'll look to exploit. But I'd like to see the UK government start doing a bit for the critical minerals industry in the UK. I know that the guys down in Cornwall got 58 million. And everyone you talk to says, yep, that's great. But now the government say, well, yeah, we've done that, and now the pot's empty. If the UK government wants to access and have access to critical minerals that we're all going to need, then there are multiple avenues open to them. They only have to look at the pension fund situation in Australia. That's great for the exploration industry there. You look at Canada and what the provincial governments do. You've got the OJEP in Ontario, which is a funding grant mechanism, which is great. And you've got a federal level. You've got, as I say, flow through and potential grants available. But yeah, I'd like to see the UK government do more, Rob. I think they can. I don't think it's expensive for them. The UK Critical Minerals Association, they obviously released their report. From my perspective, it was great to see that. But I'd like to see more input. I think it's clear if you read that report that there's been minimal input from microcap or junior explorers in London. And I think that, and that's where your discovery is going to come from. It's from that risk capital. So how do you support? The government in the UK needs to bring some more support into the explorers in the UK to enable them to go out there and do what needs to be done.
You mentioned a few times about the board. I just wondered if you can just tell us a little bit about some of the executives that make up your board, and any other people that are associated with the company, who you want to obviously name and put out there. So yeah, just wonder if you can tell us a little bit about the board.
Yeah, no, we've got a great board. Been very supportive. We did have a little bit of a change in the autumn. But we've got, so Nick O'Reilly, he's chairman. Nick's competent, he's a geologist. He's also a competent person for reporting to the London Stock Exchange. He's involved in, he loves, yeah, he's involved with Geological Society. He's a very competent geologist. Was actually heavily involved in the Samphire, which is now Sandfire, discovery in Botswana. The copper play. It was actually Australia's Mod Resources that made a discovery. That's actually now a producing mine. And Nick was right at the forefront of that. He might not thank me for this, but he was also quite involved in the Great and Gold discovery up near Telfer in terms of the conversations there. So he's got a great background. We've got Katie. She's our accounts. Now we're a rare beast as an explorer. Maybe this is why we've been able to manage our financial position as we move forward. Katie does our accounts, but we run a live cash flow in the business. We know exactly where we are at every single stage of our development. And she's an underused asset as far as I'm concerned at the moment, because as I say, Rob, if our market cap was given a decent push, then I'd certainly be looking at M&A and other ways to advance the business. I'm a big believer in decentralized structures. So, and that's how you build my little companies big. You put everybody in their area. So for instance, if we've got the graphite, you build your team to look at the graphite, build that graphite out so that we can concentrate on looking in other areas, and that's how you do it. And she's a financial whiz. And a fantastic asset. We've got Simon is the senior member of the board. He's been around London for a lot of years. He was a legacy appointment via the Aquarius company. He's a great guy, very supportive, knows the industry, knows the marketing side very well. And he's been there. And Then we've got Tracy Wazlowski. She was appointed in the autumn, along with Katie, actually joined the board in the autumn. We had two changes. And in fact, Mitch and Kate, who left the board, absolutely fantastic. They were a pleasure to deal with. And it was just a case of maybe me adjusting our focus. With Tracy's based in Toronto. She's got a black book to die for. And we're getting more and more interest in Canada, and particularly in Toronto, as people woke up to the assets, woke up to the potential, especially on a Bonga. It's 285 square kilometres of pretty much virgin land. There's no historic mining on there. And if you make the discoveries you think you will, then it's not going to take very long for substantially bigger companies to come sniffing, right? And I just felt that we needed maybe our network in Toronto as opposed to Vancouver, where Mitch was. And Mitch was very supportive, brilliant guy. I'd recommend Mitch to anyone. And that's Panther Board. I'm actually looking now, again, this is something that isn't in the public domain, and whether it ever gathers any pace, I don't know. But I'm keen in the UK. We don't tend to do it. But I'm keen to build an advisory board around Panther now. I know that the interest we're getting outside, I know that this looks like a company that's a micro cap, that's a typical exploration company. We're not. We've got the assets to support it. And I'm looking at potentially building an advisory board. I think that'd be very useful to us as a company, and useful to the main board. And bring those people on board as we look to exploit as well. You know, the government funding, the provincial funding, the end users. Make no mistake, graphite. If that kicks quickly, there will be end users knocking on your door. That's what's happened over the last few years. We've seen it everywhere. And then of course you've got the majors dropping down the food chain potentially as well. So it's not going to do us any harm having an advisory board, increasing our network, making sure we've got eyes where we need them as we develop and grow this thing.
And lastly, what's the outlook for Panther Metals over the remainder of this year going into next year?
It's one that I steered clear from talking to the market about, actually, and it's something that I can understand investors' frustrations on it. Investors want a clear route. Now, we have all of our plans in place. There are certain things that you have to be able to, boxes you have to be able to tick. And once those are ticked, I will go in more depth. But look, there's no doubts about it. We will have boots on the ground, on the graphite, on the Bonga, as soon as snowmelt happens. If we're lucky and we can get on there in mid-April, we'll be there. But you've got to remember, it's probably 200 kilometres north of Thunder Bay. So the climate is slightly more frigid than Thunder Bay, which is a saying in itself, because that can be a cold city. But mid to late April, we don't expect a particularly long work programme there. But if we can prove what the historic reports are saying, then that's going to become exciting really quickly. And we will then just kick on, by the way. Once we've got, there'll be no holding us back on the graphite. As I say, the VMS is about step out drilling. And we've got avenues available to us that I can't really go into at this point. But that's what prevents me from providing more detail. Because as I say, I'm keen to protect our share structure. We don't struggle for offers. I've got to make sure that we're taking the right ones when we need to. I've mentioned flow through. It will be a medium to long term thing, and there may be some left field activity that once that's known, if that transpires, I'll be able to provide a lot more detail. Well, all the drill hole applications are in. We've announced that to the market for Wishbone. We'll have further ones going in at Awkward. We will also have some further ones going in around the graphitic area. So people can see that the plans are there. And just occasionally, you know, we've got to ask people to just put two and two together and come up with four, but don't come up with five or three like some of the message boards. We're in a good place. We've just had some money come in via the disposal of stock of Fulcrum, and we're happy with where the plans are. I think the way I see it, Rob, I think there's going to be a lot of news flow in a very short space of time with us. It's going to be a very, very busy summer. And I've warned my wife to that extent. So once you're giving the wife a warning in advance, you know you're not giving yourself that headache for no reason.
Yeah. Darren, really appreciate your time. Thank you for giving us an update on Panther Metals. Exciting times ahead. Perhaps you want to come on later this year and give our audience an update on some of the drilling that you've been involved in and our other news flow that may happen over the course of this year.
Rob, I'd love to. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. And also, if our audience wants to reach out to you, if they want to obviously follow your story, and obviously if you're looking to build an advisory board, you never know, there might be some people that are listening that could be suitable and maybe interested, and obviously they can reach out to you. So what social media platforms are you on, and how can people follow yourself and Panther Metals?
I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Twitter. Just search my name, I'll come up. And people are more than welcome to reach out at any time. Go onto the website, you'll find on the website, certainly my email address at a minimum, my mobile might be on there. If my mobile's on there, give me a shout. Maybe text first, because I get a lot of nefarious calls these days. I don't actually always answer my phone straight away, but I'm always happy to have a conversation. I will talk about Panther, and that can go on at times for some time, so I will warn people in advance. We're in a good place.
Yeah, no, we'll include those in the show notes of companies anyway, for easy access. So, like I said, really appreciate your time, Dan. Hope you can come on next year. Later this year, and give us an update on the results that you've achieved as the year's gone on.
Love to. Thanks, Rob.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed that episode. Again, another great episode there. And as always, appreciate your continued support. Please keep sharing these episodes far and wide. As always, not just people within our mining industry, but people outside of our mining industry. And obviously with this episode, please share it with people within the North American market, so they're up to date with and also understand our mining industry as well. The only way that we're going to improve, I suppose, the perception of industry is sharing this content with people outside of our industry. So like I always say, I really appreciate your continued support. So please keep sharing it. Please keep sharing these episodes. I think our market, as we've spoken, is about to turn, if it's not already turning anyway. So I think mining is going to play a critical role over the remainder of this decade. But we're just waiting for that tipping point to push itself over the top and away we go. So, as always, appreciate your continued support. And until next time, happy mining.
Thank you for listening. Remember to reach out to Rob via the show notes and be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Until next time, happy mining, helping each other to improve the mining industry.